go to Matthew 24. Last week we had the opportunity to talk about the abomination of desolation and kind of try to go through and put some of that stuff together. I've got to tell you, I've got so much, I've looked at this stuff. I'm trying to get everything organized in my head trying to figure out how to go with this. Tom did a little research for me. Appreciate that, Tom. So we have dates and things. I did a little on my own as well. So we actually have an idea of who did what and when and how and why. Well, okay, maybe not. We know the whys. And I had intended, I didn't have time to find it, but I was going to look in Josephus and see if I could get a description. And I've got a little, you got a little bit of a description of the things that happened with the destruction of Jerusalem, but wasn't exactly all that I was looking for. So I probably won't go with that. But what we were talking about, the abomination of desolation. And in order to get what we're going to look at today is going to be from verse 29. So if you want to go ahead and look at Matthew 24:29. It says, "But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory." Okay, now, in order to go through all that, we're going to have to deal with one word there, and that is immediately. Interestingly enough, last Lord's Day evening, I was told that I was a preterist, and which I got to thinking about it this morning. It was Bob Allen. I'd say it if he were here, so it's okay. But Bob said, "Yeah, you're sounding a lot like a preterist now." And I just thought, you know, I got to thinking about it this morning. I thought, you know, he was the one that got accused of being a premillennialist all the time, and I was the one that said, "Hey, he's not a premillennialist. I've taken the time to listen to him." So I think he's going to have to listen to this too and have to take the time to listen to me to realize I'm not a preterist. So it kind of goes that same way. Preterist, you want to know what a preterist is? Okay, a preterist, many, many moons ago, not that many ago, there was a man here that strongly advocated the preterist position. Bob Davies. Am I right? Is that who was? Dave Pease as well. But I believe Bob Davies. I actually saw some stuff that he put together for... what's that?
There's a guy named Don, I believe it's Don Preston.
Was here?
No, he's out of, I think he's out of Texas or he's out of Florida.
Yeah.
But he has really stemmed that movement behind those guys.
Right. Oh, okay. Okay. And there's...
actually have a CD from him that these guys base that belief on if anybody wants to watch it.
Right. And there's another one too, and I cannot think of his name. I actually was introduced to it in Ghana. Totally had absolutely nothing to do with Bozeman, just somebody else prior to meeting anybody from here. Jeff Hostetter and I kind of got introduced to it, and never totally went that direction. Jeff did for a while. I never really totally went any direction with him. I just read about it and all. But anyway, preterist basically believes that Jesus, the second coming of Christ, has already happened, and it happened in 70 A.D., and that it was a spiritual, if I remember all this, there was a spiritual second coming. And so the second coming has already happened, is the whole preterist position on things. So in order to make sure that I don't come across as a preterist, I have to do a little math this morning. Because I'm going to have to explain the word immediately in verse 29. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 9. And I have to admit, I don't mind doing the math. I actually like math. You guys might mind me doing the math. And we briefly looked at it. But Daniel 9, 24.
Daniel
He says, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in an everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. Okay, so it says 70 weeks. For the Jews, when they're talking about weeks, it can be weeks of days or also weeks of years. Okay, so 70 weeks, we went through this in my learning center, not this. We went through what 70 times 7 was, and it took a while to get to it. Hopefully you guys can get to 70 times 7 a whole lot faster than they did. Anyone want to just throw it out there real quick? 490, thank you. We had 4,900, we had all 49, you know. So you guys are beyond fourth and fifth graders, so that's good. So you're smarter than a fifth grader. There you go. You can now go away confident. You learned one thing today. You learned you were smarter than a fifth grader if you knew that answer. Okay, so it's 490 years. Now, he goes on and he says, from verse 25, so you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. Okay, so it says from a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. And you actually had several little decrees along the way. You had the first one that was given to Ezra, or first one that was given to Zerubbabel to go back. You had then Nehemiah going back to build the walls, but you also had one for Ezra to go back in. And actually what he was doing was not only finishing things up, but he was responsible for the spiritual rebuilding, getting all that going on too. That was 457 B.C. Said I was going to do math, not writing. Okay, 457 B.C. Now, it says from that time then, it says there would be an issuing, from that issuing a decree until Messiah the Prince would come. Okay, that would be Jesus, just in case anybody's curious. It says there would be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Okay, more math. 7 plus 62, or if you do it the 62 plus 7 is 69. Very good. So 69 times 7, so we get our number of years here. Well, you're smarter than a fifth grader, but no. It's since 70 weeks is 490. We'll do a little mental. This is called mental math in the Saxon math we do. Since 70 times 7 is 490, 69 times 7 would be 7 less than this, 483. Told you we were going to have fun this morning. It's you guys. It's your fault. You all started it. So. But you're from the generation before calculators, Tom. You don't need them. Oh, you got to raise them. He's doing it. He knows. Be careful. He might actually. Do you know how to use a slide rule?
No.
You don't. Good. Okay. Anyway, 483 years. Okay. So, 457 BC, starting from there, counting 483 years, because of the funky little BC AD change, we have to do it this way. And just so you know that I do know how to teach them properly. AD 26. That would be then the year that Jesus was immersed. Which, funky as it may sound, he was probably born somewhere around 4 BC. So, 4 years before Christ, he was born. So, you know, sometimes making up calendars, they do tend to make mistakes. So anyway, AD 26 would have been then his appearing, his talks about the Messiah, the Prince, will come. And then and it says, we keep going there. Okay, verse 26. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with the flood, and the end of, even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. Okay, well, if we went, it was 70 weeks. The appearing of Jesus was at 69 weeks. That leaves 1 week. So it says he makes a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. There's 1 week from AD 26, 1 week of years, so 7 years, from the appearing of Jesus until the end of everything. Now, you might be going, okay, hold on a second. 7 years, that's 33. Hopefully you're doing that. And going, we're a little past that. We'll get to it. So make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week. Okay, here's more math. Seven, the middle would be 3.5. Good. You are actually as smart as a fifth grader. I've got fifth graders who can do that, so we're okay. 3.5. So you add your 3.5, that's going to put us right around AD 30, depending on when his whole immersion thing happened. So his immersion, AD 26. His death was in AD 30. Or 30 AD, however you prefer. So, that gets us our 3.5 years. We have 3.5 years left. And it says, in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings. With the death of Jesus, there was no longer a need for any other sacrifices. Now, they did continue in the physical realm. They did continue until 70 AD. They continued making those sacrifices. And even today, they still pretend like they're doing something. But the actual end, the stop, the necessity for those sacrifices ended in AD 30 at the death of Jesus. He put an end to that. Now, it says he'll put a stop to sacrifice grain offerings. On the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction. One that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Okay? And so that's where you get your abomination of desolation. So we went last week. It may seem like a year ago to me, but it's just a week. Last week we kind of went through the abomination of desolation, AD 70, the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay? But here's what I want you to get. According to the 70 weeks determined, you have, and in weeks of years, that would be 490 years. Of that 490, we've already finished up, 486 and a half of those, leaving 3.5 years. Okay? Let me see if I can find one of these for us. Go over to Daniel chapter 12. And we'll get a couple things out of Daniel 12. I just want you to notice one thing real quick here. Daniel 12, verse 7. It says, and I heard the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, as he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. And as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events will be completed. Okay? Time, times, and half a time. Time, times, and half a time. 3.5. Time and times. Time is the one times two and half a time. And that's what you see if you get over to Revelation. For fun of it, let's see if I can find one of those real quick. It's a whole lot more fun this way. You know? You have to actually think a little. Where'd that go? Let's see. Gives us a couple of them. Revelation 12, maybe. See if Revelation 12 will give us one of these. They're actually several times, and in several different ways, you'll get this in Revelation. I believe that when it talks about 1,260 days sometimes, is that 3.5 years? Jewish years of 360 days. So, sorry, go over to chapter 12. Revelation 12. Verse. Oh. Okay, sure, you've got that. 14 is what I'm looking for, yeah, but 6, we'll get the 1,260 days. Revelation 12:6, the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she might be nourished for 1,260 days. So you got 1,260 days. Over in chapter 12, verse 14, it says, and the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. And so, you know, throughout Revelation, it's going to talk about this in various ways, talk about this 3.5 years. 42 months is another one. Thank you. I was going, okay, days, years. I knew there was another way it's put in there. Thanks. 42 months. So Jeff pointed out 13:5. Says, and there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. Okay, so the same thing. 42 months, 1,260 days, time, times, half a time, all come up to 3.5 years. Okay, now, what I want you to notice is from AD 30 until everything is all done, it says 3.5 years. Now, up to this point, he was going physically counting the years down, and it works really perfectly. There was some kind of a transition that took place at the death of Jesus. And I believe that was moving from the more of the physical realm to the spiritual realm. So I think even in the idea of time, which, by the way, there is another way this 3.5 years is termed. It's called a millennium, 1,000 years. But we won't go there. but that's all those things are used to refer to the time from the beginning, or sorry, from the death of Jesus all the way up to when Jesus comes back. Now, when we were counting in the physical years, it was pretty easy to count. Since we don't exactly have a time frame on God's spiritual time, we don't know where we're at in the 3.5 years. I mean, for all we know, we just made it 2 days into it and we've still got a long time to go. Or we're at 3 years, 5 months, and 29 days, and we're in the last day. Whatever the case, the whole idea is, in this 490 years, in this 70 weeks, the time that the church is here on earth, the time that we are here, is all fitting into that last little 3.5 years. Spiritual time here. Are we tracking okay? Some are going yes, some are just kind of staring blankly. That's okay. And others are making funny faces. Right, Lynn? Okay. Now, here's the reason we talk about that.
I have a question.
You have a question.
If you're trying to speak to someone logically about this.
Are you referring to this as not being logical? Is that what you're saying, Tom?
I'm saying I don't understand this logically. I mean, I'm tracking with you up to this point, but now all of a sudden we've made this switch from 3.5 years now being an indeterminate amount of time. how can you prove that? Or how can you show someone that when they say, wait a minute? You know?
Okay. That's a good question. I'm not sure I'm going to have an answer for you, especially since it's not logical so far. How are you going to prove it? Yeah, because I said, no. The best that you can do, you know, you can get this part really clearly, and you can nail that down. Then the whole question comes in, well, what about that last 3.5 years? And you'd have to say, okay, what happened in AD 33, AD 34 that was the end of everything? And so it seems like, I mean, the best that I can do for you is something, you know, obviously this was a major transition point. And even Daniel makes it out that that was a major transition point. And he doesn't really discuss what happens in the 3.5 years after that. I think you would have to go through the stuff in Revelation some, with the 42 months, with the 1,260 days, and with the, what else was there? Three times and half a time. I think you'd have to go through some of that to try to, at least, in a sense, I don't know if you're going to say, hey, I can prove this definitively, but I think you can give a lot of evidence to say something had to have happened. There's got to be something in this realm. You can nail it down on a few other things as far as like the millennium and all that kind of stuff. Those kind of things you can nail down. But the whole 3.5 years thing, you got to go a little flexible. And that's, I'm giving you the best I can do with it. So now the whole reason we're going through that, and I got to decide how I want to do this. The whole reason we're going through that, go back to Matthew 24:29. Gary.
Yeah, just before you go back to Matthew, just to bring to your attention, because it might come up sometime in the Bible study, is that there's one unique difference between a timeline and a number line. A timeline doesn't have a zero, okay? So with your math there, you're off by a year, okay? But now, because I asked you this question, because I was this doesn't make sense. It should be AD 27, because there is no year zero, okay? But you got to remember, though, the Jews counted the first and the last, like, you know, the circumcised on the eighth day. That was really a week later. It wasn't 8 days. They counted that particular day plus the seventh day to come up with eight. So that's how you answer that question, but you know what I'm saying? The number line, timeline are different.
Right. Thank you. Did you guys get what Gary was saying there? You don't count zero. So when we're going through this here, you would maybe think that should be 27. And what Gary's saying is the Jews, when they're doing their counting, count the beginning. When they're counting their times, they also count the first. Am I right with what you're saying? So, first and last. So, his example was, when they talk about being circumcised on the eighth day, they would have counted the day the baby was born in addition to, you know, so if the baby's born on Wednesday, they'd count Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The eighth day then would be Wednesday again. Is that what you're getting at? And so they do the same thing with the years. So, okay, thanks, Gary. That's an important little thing to stick in there. Okay, Matthew 24, verse 29. The whole reason we went through all that, when we were reading earlier, what we were going through earlier, actually, let's back it up to verse 15. Getting our picture again in Matthew 24, the apostles have looked at the looked at the temple, talked about how wonderful it was. Jesus said, this is going to be destroyed. They want to know, when is it going to be destroyed? How is that going to happen? And they're equating it with Jesus' coming, when he was going to come set up his kingdom. That's what they thought was happening. So Jesus explains it to them that, you know, and really their question is particularly toward the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple. But Jesus deals with that and with some other things they included, because they didn't include everything. They had some other things in there. So they asked in verse 3, Matthew 24:3, They said, when will these things be? That is the destruction of the temple. And what will be the sign of your coming? Which is, they're still thinking that's happened at the same time. And of the end of the age, which they're still thinking is this whole, all the same thing. Now, Jesus deals with it as far as the destruction of Jerusalem, but he also, or the destruction of the temple, but he also then answers that last question about the end of the age, his coming and the end of the age. And so he starts going through and talking about wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines and all these things are going to happen. And he's still talking about the destruction of the temple, when that would happen. Got down to verse 15 about the abomination of desolation. It says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. Let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak. Woe to those who are with child and those who nurse babes in those days. Pray that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath, for then there will be a great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. Okay, all that's tied in with the abomination of desolation. Last week we took the time and kind of looked and saw that if you compare Mark and you compare Luke, that abomination of desolation would be the armies surrounding Jerusalem, surrounding and standing where they ought not in the holy place, actually when they were in the temple. Now, let me give you a few bits and pieces of information. Last week there was a little discussion of when were some of these things. Like, the original idea of the abomination of desolation, we said, was Antiochus Epiphanes, when he actually sacrificed pigs on the altar. And so that was kind of what we were talking about some, but we didn't have dates on it. So here you go. Here are your dates. Antiochus Epiphanes was actually a Seleucid when Alexander the Great had conquered. At his death, it was all divided between four generals. One of those generals was Seleucus, and he got the area that would be like Syria and all of that area. They were always kind of working their way south, trying to get Jerusalem and all that kind of stuff. And so in BC, let's see, 175 BC is when Antiochus the Fourth, otherwise known as Antiochus Epiphanes, when he came to power, was 175 BC, and actually around 165, I believe, is when he came down and started fighting against and conquered Jerusalem. And so all this stuff that happened in Jerusalem, he came in, conquered them, went into the temple, all that area, set up an altar to Zeus over the altar, and sacrificed pigs on it, which would have been an abomination to the Jews since they, you know, that's an unclean animal. And so that's what he did. That was around 165 BC. And I believe it was that was 167. Sorry, that was 167. In 165 is when Judas Maccabeus helped get him out of there and kind of clean things out, which is then from that point is why that was the beginning of Hanukkah. So Hanukkah is actually the celebration. When you get around Christmas time, the Jews celebrate Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights. That's in celebration of Judas Maccabee driving the Seleucids under Antiochus Epiphanes, driving them out of Jerusalem in 165 BC. So there you go. There are some dates, some real history for you. Some other things. The Maccabees then kind of handled things for a while. In 63 BC, this is some stuff that Tom put together. 63 BC, Pompey, which would be a Roman, captured Jerusalem. And I believe Tom and I were discussing it and we couldn't remember. But I believe that's the time when he actually went into the Holy of Holies. Is he the one? Was it he or Crassus? It was Pompey that went into the Holy of Holies and looked around and there was nothing there. Didn't touch anything. So he actually went in, you know, they had this, their Holy of Holies, and the Romans kind of wanted to check it out, and they were, I remember they were kind of mocking after that, that the Jews had a God that couldn't be seen. You know, there's nothing there. They went into the Holy of Holies, nothing there, because the Ark of the Covenant was gone by that time. 54 BC, Crassus raided the temple and took some gold, 10,000 talents. That's good chunk. And I think that's the destruction then of Jerusalem. Let's talk about that for a minute. Last week we were talking about who it was that destroyed Jerusalem, whether it was Vespasian or whether it was Titus. And I got to thinking afterwards, Gary, do you remember? I went, why did I even have a question about this? Less than a year ago, when Gary and I were in Rome, we had one day where we could do the tourist thing. One part of a day where we could do the tourist thing in Rome. And so Gary took me around and showed me all kinds of stuff. The Colosseum, which is pretty cool. One of these days I ought to break out the pictures and stuff. It's all on my computer somewhere. But, you know, the Colosseum, we went in, checked all that out. Actually had a chance to stand where the floor of it would be. It's not really there right now, but where the floor of it would be if we were on trial, if we were Christians who were condemned. I did. I'm pretty talented. They had built out a section of it. Yes. And they replaced a section of it. Some parts of it have been replaced, but they've left most of it uncovered so you can see all of the little things underneath the yeah, the passageways and stuff underneath. Because, you know, if you ever see the movies where they got the Colosseum and suddenly these lions pop, sorry about that, Mel. These lions pop up from it all over and, you know, the floor of the Colosseum at times, something would open up and something would, a critter would come out. And, that's because you had all these passageways underneath and openings to get up. So anyway, you could see all that. But anyway, we're not talking about the Colosseum. It's just over by the Colosseum was an arch that we actually went and looked at. And it was the Arch of Titus. And it was something that he built in celebration of his victory over Jerusalem and his destruction of Jerusalem. So Titus was the general who conquered Jerusalem. Vespasian was his father, who was emperor at the time. So his father, Vespasian, was the emperor at the time that Jerusalem was destroyed. Titus was the general. After that is when Titus came back and became emperor. So he was the emperor after that time. Okay, so just side note, in case anybody's curious. So that gets us up to where we're looking at, that these things there in Matthew 24, a lot of them are about then the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. The abomination of desolation, the Roman army actually coming in and conquering it. We talked some last week about the Great Tribulation. It says there would be a Great Tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. And so we were discussing a little bit about, was that the greatest tribulation that ever happened? Wouldn't there be some things like the Holocaust or Stalin's destruction of Christians or Saddam Hussein's stuff in Iraq, or isn't there something that would be comparable? And what we get from Scripture is that was the worst. Didn't you write something on here about that? Oh, there it is. Estimate of 1,197,000 killed in the final days. I'm assuming that Nasty Business was your addition to that.
The way they killed, they thought yeah. that a lot of the Jews had swallowed the gold out of the temple and places. So the Roman soldiers and the Assyrians that were working with them would actually sell people to find the gold.
Right. We were talking a little bit afterward last week, and Debbie was standing there as they're talking, and I don't remember who it was that was standing with me that started going into a description of some of the things. Bob, was that you that was doing that? Going into a description of some of the things that happened, and Debbie went, okay, that's enough. That's enough. I don't want to hear any more. You know, it was pretty nasty. It was nasty stuff. Okay, so most what you got then is the destruction of Jerusalem. Well, going from verse 22, it says, unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, which would have been the Christians, those days shall be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, behold, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. I believe that at that time, like by the time the Roman armies were there, they surrounded the city, and that I think you still had some guys who were claiming to be the Messiah within the city. Now, it didn't work out too well, but there were some who were making that claim. Verse 25, behold, I have told you in advance. If therefore they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, do not go forth, or behold, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe them. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, up to this point, all the way through 26, he's dealing with the destruction of the temple. He's just dealing with the destruction of Jerusalem. He's dealing with the stuff at 70 AD and nasty times. And what he says in verse 25 is critical. He says, behold, I've told you in advance. You know, Jesus is trying to give them an idea of what's going to be coming so that they can be ready, so that they can know. As he said earlier, when you see these things happening, when you see the abomination of desolation, when you see that happening, he says, get out. When you see any of these signs happening, get out of there. Be gone. You need to be away. So he's trying, you know, one of those he who has ears to hear, let him hear kind of thing. He's trying to get people ready for that time. Well, he also, though, for those who would try to say that Jesus, that was going to be his second coming, he says, you know, and try to send some kind of deception that way, he says, just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. See, consistent with Scriptures is that when Jesus comes back, every eye will see him, even those who pierced him, according to Revelation 1, I believe. Okay, so every eye is going to see Jesus. His coming is not going to be a secret one, which is the point that he makes. If people are coming and saying, oh, he's in the inner rooms, oh, he's over there, he's saying, no, don't go for that, don't fall for that. When I come, it's going to be like the lightning flashing from east to west. It's going to be a major deal, and everybody's going to see it. And so then verse 28, wherever the corpse is, the vultures will gather, just kind of giving that a very graphic description then of what Jerusalem's going to be like. Jerusalem, the corpse, the Roman armies, the vultures that are gathering around. And it sounds like from the description that Tom was giving of what they were doing, that was very vulturish. To be cutting them open and trying to get gold out, or at least hoping to get gold out. Okay, verse 29. But immediately after the tribulation of those days. Okay, and this is why I was being accused of being a preterist, is because if the tribulation of those days, if that is actually referring to AD 70, then what's he mean by immediately after that? Because it says immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, the powers of the heavens will be shaken, and then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together the elect, his elect from the four winds from one end of the sky to the other. Okay, now, 29 through 31, you can't make that fit AD 70. It didn't happen. You know, Jesus didn't, which is where the preterists actually say that did happen. When those who would say that the second coming, that's what they would say would happen. Now, that doesn't exactly fit with verse 27 very well, that it would be like the lightning flashing from east to west. If it was a spiritual kind of coming, then how did it happen from east to west? And, you know, the picture that he gives is that it will be seen. But what we want to deal with is that immediately after the tribulation. You know, this is where when you're dealing with premillennialists, you're actually dealing with those who would say the tribulation has not yet happened. And so they try to make all those earlier things apply to some future event. I think you can look through Matthew 24 and see that those things did happen in the past. It's not a future event. So then what does immediately mean? Well, if we're looking at the 70 years, the 70 weeks or whatever, we saw that we're down to the last little bit of the big picture. And so in that idea, you could still say immediately. The other thing that I would say with this is even throughout the New Testament, it talks about how Jesus is coming soon. Jesus says, the end of Revelation, behold, I'm coming quickly. You know, the picture that Scripture gives is that he's coming and it's going to be soon. It's going to be quick. Now, that was about 2,000 years ago, almost, not quite, but almost 2,000 years ago, and he hasn't come. But if he says here, if he can say in those places, I am coming quickly, I am coming I'm coming soon, and he says here immediately, it fits. Now, what's his idea of quickly, soon, and immediately? Well, to a guy that doesn't deal with time, who's no longer bound by time, I don't know. But what I do know is that it fits. Then here he's talking about the second coming. And that's kind of flying back to Tom's question earlier. That's where when you get down to this last little 3.5 years, if you figure 3.5 years out of 490, it is immediately. You know, looking at that time frame, Jesus is saying this, it's the last week of his life. So let's say that we're right there in AD 30. In the 70 weeks, or let's go for the 490 years of Daniel. Jesus is saying this at 487 and a half. Is that right? 6.5. 486 and a half. You know, if you told your kids that we're going to be gone for 490 minutes, and you call them at the 486 and a half minute and say, I'll be there soon. It's soon. You know, when in the whole scheme of things, anything that's happening in this time period, anything that's happening since the death of Jesus, there's a sense of immediacy. There's a sense of soon. It can happen anytime. We do not know. And that's what Jesus is working toward. Rick. Hopefully you can bring some clarification to me there. Make me sound a little bit more.
Well, the way I picture it is, it's sort of like when a person dies outside of Jesus Christ, then Jesus came all too soon. And when it's there in your face, then that's the way it is. And this is the way it is for all of eternity. Then there's the sense of, yeah, that was immediately. This is soon. When you're there, it's permanent.
It's a good point. Good point. I had a discussion with somebody this week. Allow him to remain anonymous, but I had a discussion with somebody this week. And what we were talking about was, if the end of this life is 50 years down the road, or the end of this life is 6 months, puts a totally different perspective on things, a different sense of urgency, which is what Jesus is trying to communicate. I think Gary and then Stan had something, and then I want to make sure that I tie this up.
Okay. Just for the time, you know, John says that this is now the last hour, and he wrote that, you know, almost 2,000 years ago.
Right. So now we're down to the last hour. So we must be at day 489 and 11th. Sounds almost like 11th hour. Somebody should come up with like an 11th hour press or 11th hour time. So wouldn't that be cool? It's kind of catchy, yeah.
There's kind of another use of the word immediate, and that's if you're listing significant events. If you have a a significant event, the next event is the immediate event after. So we're listing significant events. We have the tribulation, and the next significant event immediately after the tribulation is the coming of Christ.
Nice point, sir. That's right on. I like that. Can I steal that? I'll borrow it. You can keep it, but I'll just borrow it. It's not yours. Did everybody hear what the comments that have been made? Are we good? What's that? Smooth talking by a politician. Statesman. A statesman.
Let me get...
I don't want to complicate this at all because it already is complicated. But Scripture also talks about how that, you know, for the Christian, Satan is bound. But there's going to come a point at the end of time when Satan is going to be loosed for a little bit. Obviously, that's going to be another tribulation. Because there's other places in Scripture where it talks about how, you know, they're going to be given in marriage and working and buying and selling just like from the very beginning. And then the Son of Man will come. So can you kind of straighten that out for me a little bit?
Next week, maybe. I'm just looking at my time going, yeah, I can, but not that quick. Hold that one. Well, let's hold that for next week.
All right, then I have another one for you.
For next week, right?
talked about how sacrifice was cut off. And again, the purpose, the necessity for sacrifice was gone after Jesus' perfect sacrifice once for all time. But we do know that Peter and Paul did still go into the temple as they were Jews and they were still following their religion. Would they have offered sacrifice? I don't know if there's any record of that ever taking place, and I would think that they would not have, but do you have any comment on that?
Actually, I think you do have a record of it. In the book of Acts, you got a couple different places where they did. You have Paul personally fulfilling a vow, looks like the Nazarite vow maybe, getting his hair cut at Centuria, which is a very nice trivia question about where Paul got his hair cut. But then where was his barber at? But then you also have when he's actually arrested in Jerusalem, it's in connection with offering some sacrifices and different things with some other guys who were keeping vows. I think part of that was just as a part of the Jewish system. I think Paul, Peter, those guys would have recognized the sacrifice for sins and all that. I don't think they would have been making sacrifices for sins. I think anything they were making were just fulfillment of vows and kind of as a cultural part of it. But anyway, I don't want to go any more on that because I do want to tie this up. Go to verse 29 for just a minute. And we're going to grab, let's see if I need to believe that clock. Almost. Okay. The quote that we're dealing with is right there. It says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, and I do like what Stan said about the very next significant event. The sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Okay, if you go back, Isaiah, let me see where this is coming from again. Isaiah 13, we'll grab just a couple of these. This is actually in some fashion quoted multiple times through the Old Testament. You know, I don't think you're going to find one exact word-for-word quote, but you find several that are very close. But what I want you to notice is the context of each one of these. Isaiah 13, and we're going to start from verse 9. Remember, it's about the stars. The sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky. Those things. Sun darkened, moon not give its light, stars falling from the sky. Starting from verse 9, Isaiah 13, 9. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, cruel, with fury and burning anger, to make the land a desolation. And he will exterminate its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. Okay, keep the finger there. Go over to Isaiah chapter 24, I believe. Yeah, Isaiah 24. We could start from here, but let's start from, this will get us a good running start. Let's start from verse 21. Isaiah 24, 21. So it will happen in that day that the Lord will punish the host of heaven on high and the kings of the earth on earth. And they will be gathered together like prisons in the dungeon and will be confined in prison. And after many days, they will be punished. Then the moon will be abashed and the sun ashamed. For the Lord of hosts will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and his glory will be before his elders. Keep your fingers there. Let's get one from Ezekiel, and we'll call it good here. Ezekiel chapter 32. Ezekiel 32. Now, this is actually spoken against Egypt, but you can kind of get the picture here. And let's start at verse 3. Ezekiel 32, 3. Thus says the Lord God, now I will spread my net over you with a company of many peoples, and they shall lift you up in my net. And I will leave you on the land. I will cast you on the open field. I will cause all the birds of the heavens to dwell on you, and I will satisfy the beasts of the whole earth with you. And I will lay your flesh on the mountains and fill the valleys with your refuse. I will also make the land drink the discharge of your blood, as far as the mountains and the ravines shall be full of you. And when I extinguish you, I will cover the heavens and darken their stars. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give its light. All the shining lights in the heavens I will darken over you and will set darkness on your land, declares the Lord God. Notice in each one of those things, you've got the sun being darkened, you've got the moon being darkened, you've got the stars being darkened or falling or whatever. There's another place that talks about them rotting. We won't go there. That's, I believe, Isaiah 34. But in each one of those cases, notice that it's judgment. It's destruction that's being spoken about. It's the destruction of things. So in Matthew 24... he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the next thing, the signs that he's telling them, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. That's the destruction. What he's talking about, this is the end, this is the judgment. That's the whole purpose of putting that quote in there. Because it all relates back to any time when there's the sun being darkened, the moon being darkened, the stars falling, you're talking about the destruction of things. You're talking about God's judgment and the ending. Usually it's the ending of something. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. That's from Daniel 7. We're not going to cover that now. But I do want you to notice, when we looked at Isaiah 24, the end of all that, after it talks about everything being darkened, then it says, Isaiah 24, 23, the moon will be abashed, the sun will be ashamed, for the Lord of hosts will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and his glory will be before his elders. You know, that you've got the idea there that the whole, it's one big package, the destruction of everything, the judgment of everything, and Jesus coming to reign with power and great glory are all tied together there in this one event. So it's kind of like Rick was saying there at the end, that the idea of immediately seems really soon if you're not doing what's right. If you're in the wrong boat, then immediately, you know, it comes really fast. You know, this Jesus talking about immediately after the tribulation, you know, his second coming, his coming for judgment, that's gonna come as a shock. When he does come, for most people, It's going to be a time of great tribulation. But it's mainly going to be an internal tribulation at the beginning, because it's just going to be fear. It'll be those who will be cowering in fear, because he will be coming for judgment. Now, he's also coming to be glorified in the saints, but it's a two-part thing. But it just depends on which side of the coin you are, as to whether you're going to be excited about it or not. And so looking at Matthew 24, looking at the things, I mean, there's a lot of, we went through a lot of details and a lot of woof, spin your head kind of stuff, but bringing it right down to what's important for right here, right now, is Jesus is coming. He is coming soon. And when he does come, it's their judgment will take place. And so just make sure that you are going to be on the right side.